Pensacola's first choice for morning news, traffic, sports, and talk. The Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. Good morning, Pensacola.
Rush Limbaugh, the most listened to radio host, a deeply polarizing figure, and the leading voice in conservative media for a generation, dies at 70.
Conservative radio host Rush Limbaugh has died losing his battle with lung cancer. He launched an industry of voices on radio and cable, a champion to conservatives, but drawing outrage over many years with his comments on women, race, and politics.
The tributes to Rush Limbaugh, the controversial conservative media icon.
Limbaugh had been suffering from lung cancer. His wife announced his death at the start of his radio show today.
I, like you, very much wish Rush was behind this golden microphone right now.
I am Rush Limbaugh, America's real anchorman.
Man, what a loss. What a just... somebody who radically and dramatically changed the American media landscape, the American political landscape, and certainly saved radio. At least saved talk radio. Saved AM radio and indirectly saved talk radio in general, because that's where, you know, that's where all the talk was back in the day. Of course, now we're on FM and AM, News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. But without Rush Limbaugh, I wouldn't have a job. News radio wouldn't exist. You wouldn't know names like, you know, Laura Ingraham and Michael Savage and Rusty Humphries. And I mean, you wouldn't know Mark Levin, and you just, none of it. I mean, I don't think you'd even know Dave Ramsey. I mean, you just wouldn't know these names because they wouldn't have the platform. You know, Brian Kilmeade, Fox News, all of it. Donald Trump. Donald Trump would have been the guy who had cameos in a bunch of movies that you kind of, you know, you heard of him because he was making the cover of magazines in New York. He would not have been president. There's no chance. In fact, I'll be honest, and it's kind of interesting, too, because, you know, Rush was not pro-Trump in the beginning, just like I was not pro-Trump in the beginning. I came around, he came around, well, he changed his view. I came around somewhat. You know, there's still things about Trump that always drove me crazy and still always will. But Trump changed his mind. I mean, he was a defender of, you know, Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio in the beginning. And, you know, said it was, you know, said Trump was not a conservative, which I don't think he really is anyway. I mean, he's Trump, right? You know, saying he's a conservative is to say he's ideological, and he's not ideological. He's much more of a pragmatist. But that's all beside the point. Rush Limbaugh made it possible. There wouldn't be MSNBC without Rush Limbaugh. He said, well, that's liberal. Yeah, as a reaction. You know, and what's fascinating to me, 437-1620, if you want to weigh in on all this and just kind of talk about Rush for a minute, Rush made it possible to do conservative radio, to do opinion radio. You know, it was interviews. Talk radio was interviews. And he didn't do interviews. He just, you know, opined for 3 hours in the middle of the day about politics. Unheard of. Impossible. Nobody's going to listen to that. That's what they thought. And, you know, a man who wound up being married to his fourth wife, a man who obviously overcame an addiction to painkillers, a man who certainly did not succeed big time in the beginning. Many, many, many things did not work out until he finally managed to find his gear, so to speak. But, you know, do you remember, like, all of the rallies that he did back in the day? You remember the listening rooms? You know, and again, I just to be clear, I've always had a problem with the way Rush did his show. I thought there were a lot of elements of it that were not helpful to American culture. But if he hadn't done what he did, I would not have the opportunity to do what I'm doing. My family eats every day because Rush Limbaugh did a radio show. Now, we'd probably eat anyway. I'd be doing something else. Absolutely, I'd be doing something. I have no idea what I'd be doing. I wouldn't be doing this because this wouldn't exist. So that idea, you know, Fox News wouldn't exist. I mean, good gravy. The influences, you just can't. And see, here's the thing. The critics, and I was kind of interesting watching the segments that the nightly newscasts on ABC, NBC, and CBS did last night. And, you know, NBC and CBS played it pretty straight. ABC was just vicious. All it was a litany of his failures and shortcomings and things he was known for being bad about or whatever. Things that made people upset at him. There's just, like, no effort to actually understand. Which, in a way, you know, when your opponents, philosophically and politically, don't bother to try to understand you, that's actually to your advantage because it means they will always misfire. And the reason people always misfire about Trump is they never understood that he spoke for tens of millions of Americans. He said what tens of millions of Americans wish they could say at their jobs or at school or in their families. And he got away with it and made a killing at it. And he loved America. And he was an optimist. He was a braggart and he was a blowhard and he was adorably egotistical. And people loved it. I know folks on the left are going to hate to hear me say this, but like Donald Trump, Rush Limbaugh was an American. If you look through history, these, you know, you think of like the robber barons and the people who achieved tremendous success over the, Rush Limbaugh was kind of like that. Just this lightning rod, magnetic, larger than life figure who leaned into it, who liked being that. And he failed and he failed and he failed and then he succeeded and he just kept on winning. You know, you get tired of the winning. Again, not my model in a lot of ways, but people who don't take the time to recognize why he was popular, why it worked. Just that never-ending optimism and confidence about America and just in general. That positivity, even in the midst of being so vicious about a lot of things, that positivity is absolutely what people loved about him. 4-3-7-16-20. So rest in peace, a man who dramatically changed American culture and entertainment and radio and politics for decades and probably decades to come as well. Davis Allen, time for traffic on the fives.
And taking a look at the front gate of NES Pensacola, the delays over there are improving now. As a matter of fact, it appears to be backed up about midway onto the bridge, so nothing too significant as you're heading through the main gate. Now, Avalon Boulevard, it is moving a little slower. In between Garcon Point Road and the toll plazas where I'm seeing these delays affecting both north and southbound traffic. But Garcon Point Bridge itself appears to be checking in clear. Avalon Boulevard, as you are north of Garcon Point Road, it is flowing smoothly in both directions. But back in Gulf Breeze Parkway, it appears that eastbound traffic around backed up around the area of the Center for Sight as you're heading towards the light that would take you to Garcon Point Bridge. So just expect some delays over there. And this report's brought to you by Executive Landscaping. Over 40 years of service. They're big enough to get the job done, yet small enough to care. Call 250-3756 for a no-hassle estimate. I'm Davis Allen with your traffic on the fives.
So, you know, every spring, you fail to do what every summer you wish you'd have thought of, which is think about your lawn, right? If you have a lawn that you love in the summer, I mean, that's fine. That's great. But, you know, an awful lot of people, you don't, right? So every summer you look at your lawn, you're like, not again. I don't want to do this. I don't want to see this again. I don't want to be the embarrassing eyesore in the neighborhood. I'm going to fix it. Well, now is the time to start thinking about that. This is why NSEC tells you to think about it early in the spring. Because this is when you start thinking about the crabgrass and preventing it from germinating. And you start to think about it in a month or so. You start to think about the grass being dormant, but treating it, you know, getting it the fertilizer end of March, right? That's the time to take care of that so it can transition from dormant to growing. So here's what NSEC says. Look, if you sign up today, get your first lawn application for free and with any new annual lawn program. And that includes the initial soil sample and the lime treatment. That's on an average size lawn. Their program is designed to work with how your lawn works over time. Things are timed, programmed to get your lawn what it needs. And here's the thing, it's guaranteed. So they say, you'll love your results. We guarantee it. NSEC, locally owned and operated all along the Gulf Coast, ENSEC.net.
I made a presentation a few weeks ago about doing a memorial dedication of the Navarre Causeway on behalf of Master Sergeant John Chapman, who was the first recipient of the Medal of Honor in the Air Force since the Vietnam era, and also to name the Navarre Bridge in honor of our Air Commando community, 13,000 people strong that live in the community or active duty, retired, and dependents of those active duty and retired individuals.
You know, the bridge was asked and be named after President Trump, and then now all of a sudden, a week later, you know, another group comes and asks it to be named. And I feel that the whole purpose of this is to not name it after President Trump, come up with something else. And you had tons of roads all around the county. You got the pier, you got the park. Out of all places, you know, the bridge, it just, I find it suspicious. I believe that it's an effort to stop it from being named after President Trump.
So, Tony Hughes was the first voice presenting at the Santa Rosa County Commission work session the other day, offering to do a memorial dedication of the Navarre Causeway in honor of the commandos, the air commandos at Hurlburt, and also of Master Sergeant John Chapman. And James Calkins, the commissioner who had originally proposed naming the bridge for President Trump, says, you're just doing this to avoid naming it for Trump. You know, you got all these other roads. Why did this show up? Now, he says, look, at the same time, we've got all kinds of other work that we need to do, and this is going to be a battle, and so I don't want to get into all this right now, but this, you know, you're trying to name it for somebody other than Trump, and that's gonna anger people.
And I'll tell you what, I like your idea. The problem is, it will offend Trump supporters. It will clearly offend the mass majority of Trump supporters because they will see it for what it is, a way to stop it from being named after President Trump.
Now, Tony Hughes said, no, you did inspire us to think about this, but it's not trying to avoid that. In fact, we can do both. We're not trying to change the name of the bridge. We just want a memorial designation on the bridge. You know, both can be done. I thought Wallace Mahut, who I probably don't agree with very often, but she had a really good comment here.
I think if Mr. Trump was approached and asked, what do you think? I think he would say, name it after our military. He supports our military wholeheartedly.
That's a really interesting observation. You know, what would Trump want, essentially? So James Calkins in the end says, look, I just want to be sure that we consider everything. I might even be open to having the voters decide on it. But, you know, let's just make sure that we have a robust discussion about this and include all the possibilities. I'll tell you one other quick suggestion. This will come up again. But if this does go to the ballot, what I hope is they use instant runoff voting, where you can vote, I like this one best, this one second, this one third. It would be a perfect opportunity to use that kind of a voting scheme if they did a ballot for the naming of the bridge or the causeway. 437-1620, Mark Jacobs in the newsroom with our headlines. Mark?
The FBI reportedly investigating New York Governor Andrew Cuomo for allegedly underreporting the number of coronavirus deaths at nursing homes. Federal prosecutors also taking part. NASA's latest Martian rover will land on Mars this afternoon. Looks to be on target for landing. NASA says a lot can go wrong during what's called EDL, entry, descent, and landing. If Perseverance does survive, it'll spend the next 2 years looking for more evidence of ancient microbial life.
I'm a big fan of that kind of music, that EDL.
EDL?
Yeah.
I thought it was ELO.
Davis is just smirking over here. Go ahead.
And you either loved him or you hated him. And my audio's
greetings to you, conversationalists all across the fruited plain. And
conservative, controversial, talk radio icon Rush Limbaugh has died from lung cancer at the age of 70, widely considered one of the most influential members of media for the past 50 years, using his far-reaching audience to push his conservative candidates and initiatives.
I am pointing at you with my now formerly nicotine-stained hands, Mark, so, which is completely false in my case.
No, I do have formerly nicotine-stained fingers.
Do you? All right. Mark, thanks for the update. 725 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Davis Allen has traffic on the fives.
Yeah, as you're traveling northbound along Garcon Point Bridge and you're getting onto Avalon and moving on through the toll plaza, it's slow moving all the way until you get to Garcon Point Road, and then it checks in clear the rest of the way on up northbound Avalon Boulevard. Now, southbound Avalon is a little delayed as you're heading towards I-10, backed up around around San Martino Street, it appears. Now, I-10, I-110 checking in clear along with 9 Mile Road, and I'm not seeing any delays along Gulf Beach Highway, and the front gate of NES Pensacola are showing minor delays, so be ready to expect, have a little patience over there. In the meantime, though, if you do notice anything else out on the roadways, you can give us a call at 2626-111. I'm Davis Allen with your traffic on the fives.
We're already reporting about 1.8 million seniors, but that's probably, we're hitting 2 million pretty close in terms of seniors that have gotten a shot. And so that's the 75% of all doses have gone to senior citizens in Florida, and we want to continue to do that and just press forward. There's still strong demand for it among seniors.
Yeah, we got Governor DeSantis yesterday talking about having the Pfizer semi-interfere, the weather is interfere with the Pfizer delivery. I didn't even realize we were getting Pfizer vaccine in Florida. I thought we were all Moderna. He says the Moderna has been completely delayed, so we'll see how that turns out. He said there's going to be 41,000 more doses coming next week. They've been promised. And that he's willing to work with the FEMA folks. Remember, he'd kind of mocked that idea. We don't need any FEMA camps down in Florida. But he says, yeah, if they can help us and they're willing to bring vaccine, bring it.
So hopefully that they'll be able to do something here in Florida as well. And I think the way they do it, I mean, each site is tens of thousands of doses a week. And so if you're talking about setting up a handful of sites, you know, that could be 50, 60, 70,000 additional doses a week. So we obviously want that. We want to make it available for everybody.
Look, if the government won't just send us more of the vaccine and say, hey, you distribute it, well, you know, fine. You want to do it your way. You want to send down your people. You want to, you know, do the centers and do 10,000 people at a center. I mean, that's fine. And, you know, I think I'm pretty sure I know what his answer to that is.
Duh.
See, Davis, since you played that song, I'll take it.
You know more because you get your news on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Build community relationships and partnerships, we have to stop over-policing certain sides of town versus the other.
So this was one of the comments that came from Jonathan Green at the Citizens Police Advisory Committee the other day. There's a lot of interesting things in that meeting, and I wanted to get some reaction from the Pensacola Police Department about it. Joining us now, we have Mike Wood, the Public Information Officer for PPD. Mike, welcome back. When you hear people talk about militarized police and that interfering with good community relationships, how do you react to that?
Well, we have to be ready for situations that are presented to us. You know, if the bad guys had nothing but a slingshot and maybe a snub-nosed 38 they were using against the police and using it against the public, there would be no need for the big, what people call turtle suits, the big protective clothing, the vest that we wear, and maybe the armored vehicles. But that's not reality. Reality is that these high-powered long rifles are used against the police. There were five officers in Dallas that were murdered by a man at long distance with a long rifle. So we have to be prepared for situations like that. And if we did any less, we would not be serving the community like we should.
I'll always defend you guys on this too. So, you know, I just wanted to hear kind of your reaction to it. One of the other things that came up in the meeting, I thought this was kind of interesting because it struck me as the kind of thing that people who haven't done ride-alongs maybe and haven't, you know, don't have exposure to as much police activity, they ask. But they were trying to talk about the questions that they were going to ask tonight at the town hall that they're going to host over at the Bayview Community Center. And, you know, one of the questions was about use of force. And they start talking about things like when people get arrested, do they always have handcuffs on? And, well, handcuffs, is that a use of force? Isn't that a use of force? I mean, you're forcibly detaining somebody with a handcuff. And again, speaking as a police officer, how would you react to kind of those questions or clarify some of that stuff?
Well, that's policy. It's not a necessarily use of force. We do that when someone is being arrested. That's for their safety as well as the safety of the officer. So, you know, that is a policy, and that is a policy within most every law enforcement agency that there is, again, for the safety of the person involved and the officer.
So everybody who gets arrested and goes in the back of the car, they go in handcuffs. And again, that's not considered a use of force because you're just securing them, right?
That is correct.
All right, very good. I know one of the things you were out of town. Actually, you were at a Crime Stoppers or you were doing something for Crime Stoppers. What were you doing?
Well, it's a meeting. We have to meet three times a year at the state level. A lot of our reward money comes from a trust fund that's held by the state. And when we get a chance to go to Tallahassee to discuss that, and right now we're trying to discuss getting the rewards bumped up for violent crimes. We would like to pay more, but there's always the possibility of our trust fund getting raided, you know, and money taken away and used in other parts or used in other ways throughout the state, and we're trying to protect that. So we go up there and we talk to folks on Capitol Hill and try to protect those dollars, and that's what we did this week.
All right, very good. And obviously I know it's a very, very useful program, you know, for incentivizing people who would otherwise not want to come forward with their information, something that's already, you know, sometimes a challenge. I know you've been out of town, but one of the things we were talking about was we get more details now about the proposal for the gun. I don't know, buyback's not really the right term because the city never owned them in the first place, but the gun purchase program that's going to be operated through your department. It looks like March 20th at Bill Gregory Park starting at 9 a.m., and they bumped up the amount of money that they want to pay. It's got to be approved next week by city council. 125 revolvers, 150 for semi-automatic pistols, and then $200 for semi-automatic rifles. My question, though, is it talked about destroying the guns once you get them if they don't match up against a crime gun or a stolen gun that would go back to its owner. You know, I've had people ask me this question. If you're buying, let's say somebody comes in and sells a fully functioning AR for $200, which is crazy because they're worth way more than that, can you not then just resell them? I mean, it seems like wasted financial opportunity for some of these things.
No, we can't resell them. We're going to have to destroy those weapons. And that's the way it's been for many years. And like you said, unless they're connected to another case. So, you know, the buyback program, people have pros and cons on it. But, you know, my position on it is it can't hurt anything. And if it gets guns out of homes that people don't need them anymore, that may have children or grandchildren in the home and they've been wondering what to do with that weapon, well, here's a way out. Here's a way to get rid of it. And as long as it saves one life, then it was worth it. You know, is it going to stop the gun violence on the street? Absolutely not. But it certainly can't hurt.
Would you be concerned as the price that is being offered as a bounty for these guns goes up that it might incentivize people to go do more of the car burglaries and looking for open doors and finding guns in the short term?
Well, that's always a possibility. But again, that's, you know, this is something that's not being proposed by the police department, and I need to keep my opinion out of that.
I understand. Hey, on that note, though, just something I'm kind of curious about because I don't know. Do you guys have very many guns that you destroy? I didn't know there was a law about that. But does that happen very frequently?
Well, it's not something that we do weekly. They build up, and then we destroy them as we can after a case is disposed of. So how many times a year we do it, I can't give that answer at this point. I can come back with that later, but it's not something that's done often.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. So I know I have asked you this question before. I could not remember the answer to this question, and since it came up and I couldn't remember, I figured I would ask you again. If I get pulled over and I've got my, you know, concealed carry in the car, what do you want me to do as an officer? What do you want me to do? Do you want me to keep that to myself? Do you want me to show you my permit with my license? Do you want me to tell you? What do you want from me?
We would prefer that you let us know that you have a weapon on board and where it is and that you have a concealed permit.
Okay, so just say that when the officer comes to the door. Hi, officer, what's going on? Here's my, and you know, I've got a permit and I've got a gun in the car. I just wanted to let you know.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's not something that they have to do, but that's something that would be nice for the officer to know.
Okay, and that actually brings up a second question. It was the same person I was talking to about this, and he said, well, you don't have to tell them you've got a permit. They already know that when they run your license plate. When you guys run the car license plate, does it display anything like who's got or who does not have a concealed carry permit?
Not the license plate. We'll have to run the driver's license and look for the carry concealed permit that way.
Okay, so but it is attached to my driver's license as a piece of information?
Yeah, and a lot of times, Andrew, the person driving the car is not the registered owner.
Sure.
So we're going to do things a step at a time. We're going to run the tag, and then we'll run the driver's license and check for wants and warrants on the person driving the vehicle.
All right, very good. That's exactly what I wanted. That's what I thought I remembered the answer was about be sure to tell, but I wasn't 100%, and that's why I wanted to ask again. We're talking to Mike Wood. He is the public information officer for the Pensacola Police Department. Mike, hang on to me for just a second. Let me get a quick traffic break in here with Davis Allen.
Yeah, going northbound on Garcon Point Bridge, it is backed up all the way into Gulf Breeze, and that's as you are traveling through the toll plaza, and it's continue on up until you get through Garcon Point Road. Now, once you get past that point, it will flow smoothly all the way up to I-10. But why is it flowing smoothly? Well, it's because not much traffic is able to get by at the moment, as we are seeing major congestion going northbound. Southbound also showing delays as you are going through Garcon Point Road. And then also southbound going to I-10 delayed, backed up to Moores Oak Drive. In Pensacola, Highway 29 between 9 Mile and I-10 is delayed, and I'm not seeing any delays at the front gate of NES Pensacola. I'm Davis Allen with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, Davis. Now back to Officer Mike Wood, the public information officer for the Pensacola Police Department. One of the other things that I wanted to ask you about, Mike, is we had an event. Again, I think you were out of town, but I assume that you're kind of informed about it. This guy was barricaded in his house, I guess, and there was a lot of uncertainty about what was going on. Can you tell us any more about where this is? I guess charges are not being brought against him at this point.
No, he was taken as a Baker Act. You know, he reached a low point in his life, and people react different ways when that happens. And this individual reacted in a way that was dangerous. It involved a long gun, and that's why the officers responded the way they did. Anytime you have a weapon involved, you have to assume that that person may come out and fire that weapon. So we have to clear in all directions anywhere that that round could go should he fire it. So that's why the several blocks were blocked off. And some people were evacuated because we have to err on the side of caution.
And to me, you know, when I heard Keith Wilkins, a city administrator, talking about this the other day, you know, there was a threat, I guess, that there was an explosives involved. And so, again, this is back to that question we had earlier, you know, having the appropriate gear, you know, and we talk about the SWAT team, having the gear you need in order to handle a threat like that is essential. But because it was peacefully resolved, I think it's a reminder that, and just, you know, to hear you say it is probably useful for folks. The goal of SWAT is not to go in there and kill people. The goal of SWAT is to save lives.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We have to be ready. You know, nobody has an issue with the police department bomb squad unit wearing those big suits when they're dealing with a bomb or putting that bomb in a large, large militarized looking vehicle to get rid of it because they know what a bomb can do. But a man with a long rifle or a gun can do the same damage to an officer. And we're not able to go beyond that area that we have blocked off. We have to stay there and deal with that situation. We have to be ready for that. We have to be ready for the gunfire. And we have to have the equipment and the vest and those type things to be able to survive that should it happen. We want to go home at the end of the day.
Very good. Oh, hey, I just got a text in from a caller. He wanted to know, it's his understanding that the law says you can't wear a mask while carrying concealed. Does that still apply these days when we're all obligated to wear masks or do so for safety reasons if we're carrying concealed?
Yeah, that's one of those things that we're not going to arrest you for. You're not going to get in trouble for that because it's mandated in some places. You just don't. Again, we're more concerned with don't bring it into. You can't wear it when you're in a bar. You can't bring it into a courthouse, places like that, government buildings. We're more worried about that. So if you have a concealed weapon and you have the mask on, and you're approached by an officer, he's not going to give you a hard time over that.
Very good. Which of course, I know you're going to use good judgment, but that's why I wanted to get you to answer the question that the caller asked. You and I usually like to talk about a cop myth, something that typically we see on television or in the movies that is just plain wrong. Do you have one for this week?
Yeah, it's funny, since we started doing this and I'm watching these shows, and I saw one this week again to where the officer came up on some a baggie of white powder, which he believed to be cocaine. So he ripped it open and he stuck his pinky finger in there and he took it and he rubbed it on his gums.
That's not how you do
it.
That
was really cool.
That's not what you really do in real life.
Yeah, you know, they didn't give us baking soda and sugar and powder and then cocaine in the academy and make us figure out which one was cocaine. It's not that. So, yeah, that could kill the officer. That absolutely does not ever, ever happen. We have chemicals that determine right there on the spot whether it's cocaine or not. We're not going to use our gums.
Not just putting a little between your cheek and gum to figure out if it's cocaine, which I mean, I think common sense would tell you that's ridiculous, but there still doesn't mean it's not in all the movies and TV shows. Well, that's helpful. Officer Wood, Mike Wood, thanks so much for the time, as always. Thanks for helping keep our community safe and informed. We appreciate you.
Thank you, Andrew.
You bet.
We're everywhere you are when you have the News Radio 92.3 app. Download it free on iTunes, Google Play, and no more because you listen to News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Good morning, 7:54 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. You know, just a quick thought about this Citizens Police Advisory Committee and not wanting to do ride-alongs with the police for some of them. I just don't get it. Look, I want you to be successful. I know I'm critical a lot, but I want you to be successful in what you're doing. And I just don't think you have any chance of being successful unless you get better exposure to what actually is done on a daily shift with police. And that's going to come from doing a ride-along. So if you guys want to get your job done effectively, that's what it's going to take. And I know some of you have, okay? So I know some of you have, and that's good. But the ones who haven't need to. Mark Jacobs in the newsroom with our headlines this morning. Mark?
Still no warmth for the freezing in the Lone Star State.
4 days of sub-freezing temperatures and no clear picture on when the lights will be turned back on here in Texas. Right now, millions still without power, fighting to stay warm, and it's already resulted in deadly consequences.
That's NBC's Morgan Chesky. In Houston, there have been more than 300 cases of carbon monoxide poisoning as people bring things like barbecue pits inside to try and stay warm. Ignore him. That's how Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell apparently plans to deal with former President Trump. Reports saying he's not interested in going back and forth with Trump, would rather focus on finding strong candidates for the midterms.
It's going to be hard to ignore him when he takes over the Rush Limbaugh show. 3 hours a day. Go ahead, Mark.
I can't.
I know. You're done?
I'm done now.
Okay, fair enough. Davis Allen, time for a quick shot of sports.
Well, it's payday for Fernando Tatis Jr., the star shortstop for the San Diego Padres. He signed a 14-year, $340 million contract.
Golly.
Makes him the third highest paid player in baseball alone. So baseball is really leading the way when it comes to signing mega contracts, that's for sure. Naomi Osaka takes down Serena Williams in the semifinals of the Australian Open, so she'll be facing off against Jen Brady in the finals.
Jen Brady?
Daughter of Jen Brady. No.
Go ahead.
That's not true at all, by the way. That final is set while Novak Djokovic, he made it to the finals. He's awaiting his opponent. I'm Davis Allen with your Traffic on the Fives. Quick shot of sports. Traffic on the Fives now. Sometimes when you
seamless.
Just have this stuff.
It's seamless.
Sometimes when these two things run up with each other. But anyways, I do want to mention that Garcon Point Bridge is a parking lot, it appears, as you are going northbound, going all the way through the duration of the bridge, up through the toll plaza, and then as you're passing Garcon Point Road. Once you pass Garcon Point Road, it checks in clear the rest of the way. Now, southbound across Garcon is backed up as you're trying to get into Gulf Breeze, backed up before you even get to the hump, and I-10, I-110 checking in clear. And this report's brought to you by Central Credit Union. They have a resolution loan at 6% APR, and it's good for 60 months. You can apply at ccufl.org. I'm Davis Allen with your Traffic on the Fives.
Stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition, and yawn and stretch and try to come to life.
Oh, it's so good. I still love the revised version where she sings from 5 to 9, because that's our work hours for the show. I love that. Oh, my goodness. Well, we're going to learn today. I know Mark will have more information about this, but we're going to learn today from FDOT at a briefing in Milton. Just what isn't quite there yet for the bridge. So, oh, man. I mean, I hope it's an announcement that everything's on track, but I think we all believe it's going to be something maybe a little bit different from that.